Welcome to Inclusion Bites, your sanctuary for bold conversations that spark change. I'm Joanne Lockwood, your guide on this journey of exploration into the heart of inclusion, belonging, and societal transformation. Ever wondered what it truly takes to create a world where everyone not only belongs, but thrives? You're not alone. Join me as we uncover the unseen, challenge the status quo, and share stories that resonate deep within. Ready to dive in? Whether you're sipping your morning coffee or winding down after a long day, let's connect, reflect, and inspire action together. Don't forget, you can be part of the conversation too. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seechangehappen.co.uk to share your insights or to join me on the show. So adjust your earbuds and settle in. It's time to ignite the spark of inclusion with Inclusion Bites. And today is episode 120 with the title, Valuing Your Health in Business. And I have the absolute honour and privilege to welcome Heather McLennan. And when I asked Heather to describe her superpower, she said that she has now experienced challenges of work and health from both sides of the fence, both as a professional and also her own personal experiences. Hello, Heather. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Joanne. Thank you so much for having me. It's very exciting to be here with you today.
Brilliant. We met a few months ago at a networking speaking event and we got chatting. So yeah, I've been looking forward to this since we met. So valuing your health in business, and as you say, in your superpower, you've experienced, shall we say, poor health or health that's impacted you in your own life, but also you advise small business owners and help them recognize how important their health is in their business. So tell us a bit more.
Yeah, so it's probably best to kind of take you back to the beginning of my career. So I'm a healthcare professional by training, and I worked from very early stages in what's known to many people as occupational health. So working for large organizations initially at the beginning of my career as part of an occupational health team, supporting employees who were injured and supporting their managers to help support them to return to or remain in work. And something we call vocational rehabilitation is the fancy terminology, but really enabling people to stay in work, because most people do want to work, and it's actually very good for us, which I'm sure we'll get into. So I've been doing that for almost 30 years, but 5 years ago, I also had my own experience of ill health and some interesting diagnoses. And I've had to really put all my professional knowledge into play for myself and reach out to many of my colleagues to help me and support me in the same process of remaining in work. And I was running a small business at the time, so it was especially interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I've worked for myself, I've been a solopreneur for, I think 1998 is when I first went out into the proper wide world, but I was freelancing probably 3 or 4 years before that. So I haven't had a full-time paid job for an employer since 1994, I think. That's 30 years, isn't it? 30 years. Wow.
Yep.
Blimey. No wonder I'm not turning grey, but no wonder I'm stressy sometimes. Yeah, so I was always conscious, very, very hyper aware that if I wasn't working, I wasn't earning.
Yes.
And I'm not one of these people that stands up there and says, I've never had a day off sick in my life. I value the time when I can't work and I need to take some time off. I'm not stoic and say, I'm going to soldier through this for the sake of it. But it is a worry, isn't it? Not having that safety net.
Yeah. So I think what's really interesting for us as small business owners is that there's several layers to that, in that if you're not able to work for a period of time, if you are the main person who delivers your business services, if you really are a solopreneur, you are not generating an income. You're not keeping your funnel full of potential new leads. Then that's going to potentially reduce your personal income if you don't have the right reserves in place. And then, of course, if anyone listening to this has had any significant period of time off, and we're talking maybe anything longer than 3 or 4 weeks, very quickly that can have a very negative impact on your self-confidence, your esteem, and actually you can go into a bit of a downward spiral, which in itself becomes harder and harder to pull yourself out of and believe you can get back to where you were before. So there's a financial cost, but there's also a heavy personal cost if things don't go well.
Yeah, I've had a, I suppose over the last 10 or so years, I've had a couple of things that have gone wrong. So I had a strangulated hernia in my belly button, which I had to have emergency surgery on, and that mm-hmm. took about 6 weeks to recover.
Yep.
I had double pneumonia one Christmas, and that took about 6 to 8 weeks to fully get back on track again. And recently I've had hair transplants, and those in their own right to take things out. And I've had my gallbladder removed. And those sort of things, when you've had that kind of surgery that takes anaesthetic, those kind of invasive procedures, there are 6 feet recovery, aren't they? And it's...
So it's really interesting when you kind of look at the big picture and, you know, some statistics and stuff out there that actually most periods of absence, and obviously a lot of the statistics are based on people who are employed. So there is a difference, I believe, which we'll come back to, I'm sure, in that the average kind of time off sick is less than 4 weeks. But if you are having surgery, you're right, you know, it's normally going to be 6 weeks or more. And that can be a really interesting time, because you know that you need to take the time to recover, to ensure that you get the best recovery and the best result from what you've had done. And depending on what's gone on, depends on how many other appointments you've got to attend, what rehabilitation you might need. And it is all consuming. And that's important to say, that if we're off sick for a period of time, actually that's about our full-time job becomes us looking after ourselves and our recovery. That should be our main focus. But that's quite hard if you've also running a business at the same time and trying to keep the wheels turning on that, as well as family life potentially in the mix. You know, there's a lot going on.
Yeah. One thing I noticed, and this is my anecdote on this, is that when I was in the midst of the procedure, the lead up, oh my word, I'm feeling poorly, I'm feeling really rough, I need to get this sorted. In that sort of traumatic element of those incidents, I found that I was completely focused on what was going on with me, not with other things. And it was one of the ways I sort of said to people that I knew I was getting better because I was getting bored.
Yes.
And it was almost like before, when I was in this trauma zone, I wasn't getting bored. My brain was saying, fix self. And it just wasn't capable. Yeah, you know, I wanted to sleep. I wanted to relax. I couldn't do anything, couldn't focus, couldn't concentrate, couldn't even watch telly. And then all of a sudden, I'm bored. I want to watch telly. I want to do stuff. I want to get up.
Yeah. Isn't it
interesting? My body told me when I was ready.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that's very true. You know, we have that inherent wisdom that we know that we need rest. We know that we need recovery. And now it is all consuming, and we can't really process and deal with other things, which also makes us, you know, potentially quite difficult to live with in those phases. And I think that's the challenge for small business owners, is that if you can feel the pull of your client, customer base, any financial concerns, but you know that you need to spend time on yourself, you find yourself conflicted in that period, and it becomes more and more difficult to do a good job. And at the same time, you're not looking after yourself adequately either. And if anything, I would say the big difference between working with people who are employed versus self-employed is that self-employed people will probably hang on and keep working too long and then try and get back to work too soon, and not allow themselves sufficient recovery or sufficient time to make a graduated return. We tend to think we want to jump in. So as soon as you have that feeling of I'm bored, you'd want to jump in completely and utterly back into work, rather than giving yourself a nice planned, what we call phased return to work.
It's, I mean, we're talking here about, the examples I use were physical. We've also got to consider another dimension as well, that the mental health needs and other things that can also disrupt us and our well-being.
Yes.
And those are often unseen, aren't they?
They are. And I think it is really important to think about physical health and mental health. Huge crossover. You know, hopefully gone are the days where we think these things are separate. They are definitely not. One impacts the other significantly. But also the unseen and often unacknowledged things like adverse life events. So if you had significant life events, that makes it much harder to cope with day-to-day living. And then if you also have a mental and or physical health condition on top of that, again, it's even harder. So those are the things that we hear about all the time that are considered trauma. They are normal life, bereavements, marriages, moving house, births, all those things that are part of normal human living. But they are events that can impact our capacity to cope, and even more so if our capacity is already limited by other factors in our health.
So what can we do to plan for this? I mean, obviously some things you can plan for because you know they're going to happen, or because they're either elective or you've been waiting for 8 months on the waiting list to get something done about it.
Yeah.
But many times we don't have the luxury of knowing what's around the corner. And that's one of the stresses as a small business owner myself, solopreneur, that there's always in the back of your mind, what if I can't, what if I can't pay my rent, my mortgage, whatever it is, or put food on the table because I can't earn?
Yeah, so that's one of the things that I've really been pulling together over the last few years from pulling together professional experience and personal experience, because you can't plan particularly, you can't predict. You know, you may have some risk factors that mean you're more at risk of certain illnesses or injuries than somebody else, in terms of, genetic factors and predisposing factors. And also what I was just saying about adverse events in life, or a huge volume of extreme life events happening, does make you a little more susceptible to things happening, but you can't plan for it. And of course, what could happen could be vastly different. You could have a broken ankle, which has a very clear treatment plan, surgical plan, and recovery time frame, or you could have something much more nuanced, maybe a mental health condition or a neurological condition, which is going to be much harder to manage and predict and need a totally different approach. But what I actually help small business owners do is try and create an overarching plan around this kind of three parts to it: keeping a business and life flowing, so looking at your financial position in general, your legal position in general, setting that up as best you can for life's eventualities, and then also considering, so if you became ill or injured, how would you handle that? How would you handle it in your business, and how would you handle it in your personal life? And of course, the outcome is different for everybody. But then you've created your own. I had a conversation with somebody the other week, and you're basically creating your own insurance plan. It's insurance, but not as you know it. It's not the type that you get off a shelf. That might be part, financial shelf. That might be part of your plan, to have some financial security, to have some legal security, but actually to have an overarching plan that says, right, if something happens, this is the broad brush of how I'm going to handle it, at least can give you some reassurance, and can give your family or colleagues reassurance that there is a plan if things go wrong.
Yeah, that's the challenge, isn't it? It's the risk management, isn't it? Risk management.
It is. I think we're risk about management. It. Yeah, and there's always vulnerabilities. And I say this, when I speak in front of small business owners, that if you are a solopreneur, there's obvious vulnerabilities. You can't account for every possibility, and you can't actually necessarily pull somebody else into your business if you get ill. But planning for those vulnerabilities and saying, well, I can't actually do anything about that, or I can't do anything about it right now, might be something you plan to implement in the future. Or it might be, well, I have to accept that if I can't work, there'll be no income coming into the business, there'll be no income coming into my home, therefore I need to have these sorts of reserves. Right, my plan is I need to sort out some reserves. And same with things like health insurance or cash plans for health cover and things like that. Is looking at that and going, well, okay, what have I got? What would I need? What would my priority be now?
And think about, I'm a solopreneur, and I've also been the principal and owner of a small business. So, 20 people, million, 2 million turnover, clients, cash flow, VAT returns, all of the stuff you end up doing as a small business.
Yes.
So it's not just my inability to function or be present, but it's also what I have to do. So authorize the payroll. Often principals are involved in sales or in production or some element of the business that is dependent on them. And it's not just their livelihood they're worried about, it's also the livelihood of the people who work in the business as well.
Yes. Yes, that's right. And I think one of the things that we also talk about is looking at the operations of the business in terms of, actually, I think, and this is quite common, isn't it? Small business owners, even as a business grows, there's maybe certain tasks that we hang on to that still only are done by the business owner or the principal, as you call them. And that is one of the vulnerabilities, because it just carries on like that because it's been like that from the beginning. So I think it's important to have some intentional plans around creating you know, what would be called from a business point of view, some kind of contingency plans, ensuring, and this is one of the most common examples that I use, is can anyone else access the bank accounts, the business bank accounts, so that if you were incapacitated in a way that meant you couldn't run the payroll, you couldn't pay the associates that you have, you couldn't pay suppliers, that somebody else could do that for a period of time. And even if it was restricted, it could be done. And I think that's about finding the stage, isn't it, as a small business owner, at which you can start delegating, even if it's outsourcing some of those things. Or if you've got trusted members of the family that you would appoint to do those things if you were incapacitated. It's taking the opportunity to think about that when things are good, rather than waiting until it's all gone belly up and other people are left worrying about it when you're in the hospital. Not caring at that point.
No, because there are many situations where you have no forward notice.
Exactly.
Of an accident or a very rapidly developing health scare.
Yes.
Development. During COVID, we saw people go from relatively healthy to ventilators in a few days.
One of the reasons that I've created these services is that I was running a national rehabilitation company at the time I was diagnosed, which was in 2019, and I was diagnosed as having had a rare type of stroke, swiftly followed by being told I'd got a rare type of blood cancer. And I was kind of using all my professional knowledge to try and manage my own hours and tasks, and we had done some preparatory delegation work because the business was growing. So I was looking to start to enable some of my team to take on more duties simply because the business was growing and it made sense. But I didn't have it all in place. And it was actually in COVID in 2020 that we'd been going through an audit process for making sure that we were putting all our governance structures in place. And that it had started before COVID. It ended up taking longer than it should have done because of COVID. And one of the people in that said, "So Heather, have you got a written business contingency plan?" I'm like, "No, I'm living it. I'm living it. You know, here I am. I've had some serious diagnoses which have led to all sorts of challenges. And then we've gone into a global pandemic. And at the time we provided rehabilitation to people in their homes, people who've been seriously injured with multiple injuries from car accidents and workplace accidents and things like that. And suddenly, of course, we weren't supposed to go into anyone's homes. So I was like, no, I wasn't a big enough business to have thought about having a contingency plan, because you're so busy building the business and trying to keep it running and just trying to keep up with yourself that we often haven't thought about these things. And the saving grace really was that we had started doing a little bit from a business growth point of view. And I was able to delegate things over. But I was also able to delegate. I was still conscious. I was able to communicate. I was able to do those things. So, yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah, my wife now works with me in the business, Marie. Mm-hmm. And very early on when I set up the limited company and with the accountant, they suggested that, I mean, there's two sides to this. One is their sort of business protection suggestion was that I make her a shareholder and authorize at the bank and, you know, could speak on behalf of the business. So that was before she joined the business. And then obviously now she's in the business, she has access to all the business sort of side.
Yep.
And it is reassuring to know that you haven't got to do everything I'm not saying Marie could just deal with everything immediately, but at least she can speak to the accountant, she can speak to the bank, she can have these conversations. Yeah. Whereas before, there's no power of attorney in place at the moment. You know, we keep talking about setting up a power of attorney.
Yeah.
But being able to have that contingency, and I remember when, I think it was my gallbladder, I was working on my own at that point, but I had a VA.
Yeah.
And I was able to messenger on WhatsApp and just said, "Look, going to hospital, having operation, need to clear my diary for at least the next week, and then we can chat once I've come out of surgery and things are happening." So it was it's the now and next, isn't it? You've got to try and think about.
Yeah, and I think it's very interesting as well when you've got a couple who are working together in a business. In some ways, it's good because it's easier, if you like, to have somebody else as a shareholder, and or give them permissions, you know, with the bank and things like that. Especially because if one of you is taken ill, the other one's also dealing with your family life and your home life, not just the business. So actually, if you've thought about it and you've discussed it and you've got something written down that if this happens, X should happen. If this happens, Y needs to happen. That means that person can go and get that document or from the computer or have you, and go, okay, I know we spoke about this, we've got a plan. But the other side of it is that you're also still quite vulnerable because it's still contained within a household. And what you just mentioned about power of attorneys, I'm not a financial advisor, I'm not a legal advisor, but having gone through all this process, that I've learned quite a lot about some of these things, in that you can have a personal power of attorney for your health and for your finances, but you can also have one for your business, because that again is important, because that accounts for if you were taken ill to the point where you weren't able to communicate, say you were unconscious for a period, and that gives somebody else the ability to deal with your work, your business. Because the other interesting thing I discovered was that unless you have made alternative arrangements, if you actually died, your business would pass to your next of kin automatically, not to a business partner if you had one who wasn't a next of kin. And now that might be okay if your next of kin is the person who's in the business with you, but if they're not, that might be the last thing they want, is to suddenly find themselves responsible for your business and dealing with its affairs as well as having lost you. So there are many things that are worth having conversations with the right financial people and the right legal people to set things up in the way you would want them to be processed in the event that you were incapacitated mentally and cognitively, and or you actually died.
That reminds me of a story of a long-standing friend of mine. His wife sadly passed away from cancer 10, 11 years ago. And they hadn't, even though there's plenty of time to prepare, it wasn't an overnight thing. It was a couple of years of going through treatment. They still didn't identify the fact that who was going to inherit his wife's shares. And yes, those shares in the business passed to their children, not to him. They yes. thought, because she held them independently in her name, her children inherited them, not him. So suddenly he's got two children owning a considerable chunk of a multi-million pound business with other shareholders that wow. suddenly had new significant shareholders in the business who had no experience in that business or no willing to be part of it. So he had to get his business to buy them out, those shares
out. There is also a thing called shareholder insurance, which means you can insure the business so that in the event that that happens, the business can the other shareholders can afford to buy out the people who've inherited. Because that's ultimately probably what you want and probably what they want. But if nobody has discussed the value of it or how that process happens beforehand, again, it's just an extra complication that somebody who's already bereaved and traumatized is having to deal with.
Yeah, and it's all these things are, with hindsight, obvious. But in this emotional turmoil where people, they tend to avoid conversations that are painful or awkward, or I don't want to talk about death.
Yeah, well, it's been really interesting because, you know, much of this is things that I've learned through my process in hindsight. I'm fortunate enough to be here to be able to do that. And some of these things, so we'll get on in a moment, you know, some of the medical aspects of it and returning to work and all that sort of thing, is that's my bread and butter, and helping people actually to do the things they need to do again. But you discover all this along the way, and that the conversations I've had with people over the last 12 months or so as I've been developing this, a lot of people, I don't really want to think about it. And there is a little bit of a mentality of, well, it's not going to happen to me. A lot of us think it's not going to happen to us. But just to share some interesting numbers. So the UK workforce, over 36% of the workforce at the moment have a long-term condition that at some point in their life will affect their ability to work. So that's a third of everybody of working age that you meet. We now know the incidence of things like cancer is rising, has been rising for a long time. It's now one in two people will get cancer at some point in their lives. So we have to acknowledge now, we have to get our heads out of the sand and say, this is likely to happen to you or a loved one or somebody in your business. If you have another business partner, something is likely to happen. And rather than ignoring it, if we start thinking about it and talking about it when we are calm and not in that phase of trauma and stress, it's going to be a lot easier to make some sensible plans as best you can. We can't plan for everything, as we've said, now, than wait until the worst happens. Because it does feel like a disaster when it happens. You know, whatever happens, it will feel like a disaster, however big or small it is. The initial stages of what happens are really difficult to deal with. So, yeah, I do want to encourage people to not sweep this under the carpet. Do have these conversations, you know, about what would you do or how would it be handled if this happened. You know, I said most people actually take off maybe 2 or 3 weeks for something and then they're back at work and it's no big deal. But if it's something bigger and more significant, it can be life-changing in so many ways. And it has, I've always talked about it to my previous businesses that we dealt with people who had serious injuries. It was life-changing for them and it was life-changing for the people around them, their colleagues, but their families big time. And you might find, I was talking with some of my clients yesterday about if the person that's been injured, but then their partner has to give up work to look after them or has to take even 3 months off work to help look after them, the impact on the whole family and the dynamics. I had this reminded me, a client a few years ago whose husband, she was ended up in ITU, an intensive care unit, I think it was several weeks. But in the first week, they didn't know how long she was going to be in intensive care. So he took time off because they had 4 children. But then his employers at the end of the first week were saying, well, how long is it going to be? And he said, I have no idea. My wife's in intensive care. She's on a ventilator. I don't know how long she's going to be there. And the next thing is, he's made redundant, or he's, you know, told that he can't have endless leave, and he loses his job. So not only have you now got somebody seriously ill with no known time frame for when they're going to be recovering, let alone returning to work. She was actually self-employed. She was part of a family business. But her husband had then lost a secure job, which kept the family functioning financially. And it can unravel very quickly, and it has this massive ripple effect. And I don't want to frighten people, but we do need to think about these things as best we can and plan, if we can.
Yeah, I mean, the experience Marie and I had in this was we, all 4 of our parents at the time, were going through their own health journey. So we became, you know, part of the sandwich generation, yes, caring for elderly parents. So it wasn't us that was affected, but our parents, there was at one point in time, each parent was in the same hospital in different wards on different floors with different conditions to deal with. And so we were obviously having to sort out their affairs and their challenges, pick them up, drive them in, you know, do all the various stuff as supportive children would do. And then, regretfully and unfortunately, Marie's mum passed away, so we had to deal with all of the outcome of that with her, Marie's dad, with the funeral arrangements and my mum had to cope with my dad going into a care home. So we had all of these kind of different situations with each of our respective parents.
Yes.
All at roughly the same time. And it took our eye off the ball for probably 3 to 6 months in some way.
Yes.
Dealing with these kind of things. So even though that wasn't a health issue for ourselves, it was a care dependency issue for parents. And that you know, as you get older, that's more likely to happen as well, isn't it?
Yeah, that's really come through actually in the last few months when I've been talking about these services, that people are saying, well, yes, we are, you know, we're primarily saying, let's look after yourself as a business owner. But of course, the reality is, if you're in that sandwich generation, especially whether it's children and parents or, you know, siblings, then it could actually be somebody else's situation that means you need to step back from your work. Because at the end of the day, you know, our families take priority over our work. You should, you know, hopefully they should and they can. And if we've made these sorts of plans for ourselves, we can use the same kind of plan to step back and take time out when we need to put our families first as well. And so, yes, although these things are talking about if you were injured or ill, the reality is that a lot of the things that you can apply you'd be able to apply in that scenario as well.
Yeah. And again, I said this earlier about mentioned the word hindsight, and you just, a lot of these things come out of nowhere. And what you're saying here is it's about, as a business owner, you're looking at all of the things you worry about in business. That continuity is often forgotten about If you think about disaster recovery, we'll get our IT system protected, we'll have our backups done, we'll have our UPS sort of, if the power goes down, we'll have, if things go wrong, we'll go to a co-working space and set up office there.
I know. Got all those.
What if I go, what if I go wrong? What if I go wrong? I put that into my plan, had I?
No, exactly. And that's one of the things that I talk about, is that actually you are your biggest liability. We protect our businesses externally. I've been on the phone to my insurers about some stuff today, checking some things. You know, you've got insurance in place, you've got those plans, you've got those backups. But what about the backup for you if you go down?
Mm.
And that's you just talking about from a business point of view. Well, what do we do if our business leader goes down? But if you are the leader and you're the one going down, you're not going to be worrying. Well, you might be worrying about your business at the same time, but you're going to have more important things to deal with too. You can't be the one managing the disaster in the business because you're the one who's dropped out of the business. So the first part of what we look at is trying to keep your business flowing and your home life flowing. And then we look at, well, how do you actually deal with the period where you need to take time off sick? And one of the things I talk about is slowing down or stopping. If you have some advance warning, i.e. you think you're becoming unwell or you get a diagnosis but it's not taking you out completely from work, you have some time. You might still not know a time frame, but you have the opportunity to look at your work and go, well, how can I modify this, reduce my hours, change my tasks, delegate? How can I reduce the workload on myself so that I can increase the time on my care for myself during this period? That would be ideal if we had some kind of advance warning. And actually, that's kind of what happened to me, because I started feeling unwell over a period of time. It wasn't a particularly dramatic stop. I became more and more unwell and struggling more and more over a period of time, and eventually took some time out, probably long later than I should have done because I was trying to run a business. But there is the other scenario where you will get stopped by something. You have absolutely no warning. Could be an accident, it could be a sudden illness, and that means that you are, you know, an unidentified date you are out of action from, and then you have to wait for treatment, you have to wait for conclusions, you have to wait on all sorts of other people, which we're not used to doing as small business owners either. We're used to being in control to tell you what's going to happen. So at that moment you might have no idea whether you're going to need 3 weeks off or 6 weeks off or 6 months.
Yeah, and what state you'll be when you come back, because the world would have changed a lot in 6 months. The business landscape, will you have a business to come back to? Will you have a house to come back to? There's a whole load of things in there that also is going to impede your ability to recover because of the stresses and the decisions you'll be making. You'll be rushing yourself back when you're not at full fitness, making poor judgment decisions maybe, or making short-term decisions rather than long-term decisions.
Yeah, and also, I mean, depending on what's happened to you, you know, there's a lot of questioning of your own identity and who you are. And that happened to me. So we met through the Professional Speaking Association. And one of the reasons that I joined that is because after my illness, I was capable of speaking. My stroke that I had didn't affect me physically in that way, but I really lost my confidence, completely lost my confidence, because I didn't know who I was. For a while, I didn't know if I was going to be capable of the things I used to do. I didn't know how the future was going to look. And I used to do a lot of speaking at conferences to promote the business. And I was speaking about supporting people's rehabilitation and getting them back to work. And I remember one of my team at the time saying to me, "So, Heather, are you ready to kind of get out there and speak at conferences again?" And it must have been about 2022, because in-person conferences were starting up again a little bit. And I think that I did my first online conference, and then the face-to-face ones were coming up, and I was just like, I can't do it, because I can't stand on the stage and talk about return to work when I don't know whether I'm doing a very good job of it on myself. And it totally changed my perception of my identity. That's been a part of the recovery, which, you know, is meanders and all over the place, because that's quite a lot of soul searching and things that you do. And you also, if you've had something like this where you literally, it makes you take stock of your life, it is the proverbial wake-up call. You do also have to go through that process of going, well, what do I want to do with the rest of my life? Am I doing the right kind of work? Do I want to be in this business? Do I want to be doing this? Or do actually I need and want to be doing something else? So it can open up a massive other can of worms.
So you talk about putting risk management in place. Let's call it risk management. That's what we talk about here. Either through insurance, through duplication, through replication, through planning, through passwords in a safe somewhere.
Yes.
How do you help people when they are trying to return back after a period of extended absence or disruption? How do you work with them in those ways?
Yeah, so actually that's the kind of the bit that I love, because I think all the things you've just talked about are about good business management. And maybe it's a case of seeing those as risk management for you as well as the business, rather than just seeing it as the business. But actually, when you've been and had a period of time off sick, the focus has to come back onto you, away from the business. Hopefully we've done all the right risk management for that and it's taking care of itself. And if it's not taking care of itself, you've done everything you can and you know you did everything you can and it is what it is, and you'll have to sort that out later. But it has to then turn to you, and the focus on you and the time and the care that you need for recovery. And of course that then brings in practical matters like attending appointments. So it takes an inordinate amount of time to attend appointments at hospitals unless you live next door. Parking charges, queues, waiting times. Then you're sat waiting for appointment. Consultants usually running behind. Then if you're lucky, you might have several appointments in the same hospital in the same week with different departments who then don't speak to one another. So the focus has to be your initial care, your treatment and your recovery. Then that has to be about, as you actually said before, that point where you start realizing you've got some capacity to think about something other than your own care. The first few weeks usually are just about what you need to do to manage. Then it's about, okay, I'm starting to feel better. What should I be doing more of initially? And they're usually more self-care things. So the nice to haves that fell off when you had to do the really serious, maybe treatment and rehabilitation. So it's simple things that we all hear about and we all talk about, but they become even more important. Good sleep, rest, nutrition. Good nutrition is the building blocks of physical repair in the body. Good sleep and rest can be so beneficial for mental health, exercise for both mental and physical health. These things are the building blocks that we often can neglect. We think we'll get around to that next week, next month. But part of that recovery period needs to be about putting those things back in first, then bringing in, well, maybe I'll think about doing a little bit of work. And the key to the return to work, there's a couple of things that happen, and they're both to do with 100%. There's two groups of people, and you probably don't know which one you'd be in until it happened to you. Although I think we have a tendency as self-employed to be one way or the other. So quite a lot of people think you've got to be 100% better before you go back to work. And that might be considered a cultural norm within an organisation if it's not being well communicated that there's a supportive process for returning to work. And the problem with that is it can lead to you taking too long off work. As we also know, the longer people are out of work and off work, the harder it is for them to return because of the spiral in mental and physical health. So waiting until you feel 100% ready and like you did before you were ill is not really practical or realistic. And you may never feel quite the same as you did before. But then there's the other side of the coin where people go, well, I need to be back at work. And they go from zero to 100 overnight, from doing absolutely nothing, saying, well, I've got to go back to work. I'm going back on Monday and I'm working a full week and I'm going to expect I can do everything. And that's usually too much. And then what happens is you end up in a boom and bust cycle. If you do too much, you get disappointed in yourself. You feel that you let down your colleagues. Everyone else also gets confused because then you have to go off sick again. And you enter into this very difficult yo-yoing period. So both of those actually can be avoided by having what we call a graded and phased return. So this is literally taking the approach that, say you did want to return over a period of 4 weeks. And I'm going to break this down very, very simply to illustrate it. And you normally work 40 hours a week. It may be that in the first week, you plan to do 10 hours a week and you plan to do it from home and you plan to do it 2 days a week for 5 days. Or you might say, well, I know I'm going to need a rest by Wednesday. So you might say I'm going to do 2.5 hours Monday, Tuesday, take Wednesday off, and then I'll do 2.5 hours Thursday, Friday. Then if that week goes well, the following week you might say, well, I'm going to do 15 or 20 hours. You can see where I'm heading with this. Then third week, you build it up to 30 or so. And then the final, towards the end of the fourth week, you're building up to your full hours. And you can also do that with the actual duties. So if you have some duties which are easier, either cognitively or physically, depending on the situation, you bring in the things that are easiest first to test yourself, give yourself a chance, give yourself a little bit of an ease in. And then you bring in those other duties as you go. And if it's been a physical thing, so my background is as a physiotherapist, and very much what we would be doing is building somebody's strength. So say you need to be able to lift things that weigh 25 kilos. In week one, we'd be doing 5 kilos. In week two, we'd be doing 10 to 15 kilos, and we'd literally be building up. And we talk about work tolerance and work conditioning. So you're using that period of you're still in recovery. You might still be managing pain, anxiety, and symptoms. You're learning to manage those. You're learning to manage the fluctuations in those and the ups and the downs. But you're also bringing back in the additional work elements and giving yourself the best chance of success. Because ultimately what we want is a return to work that's sustainable for the long term, for you and for your business and for the people around you.
And again, if we just bring into this, because a lot of the references you're giving there, in my mind, jump into physical type challenges. When we're talking about things like stress, poor mental health, bereavement, all those kind of things there, often the cause that got us there hasn't gone away. And we put ourselves back in the danger zone straight away. So that's why it's really, really important to look at what was causing.
It is, and that's really interesting, isn't it? Because if the cause of the mental health or contributing factors, because again, it's lots and lots of factors in these things, if the contributing factors were, say family bereavements, then you can't change it. It wasn't directly related to your work, but it is going to affect your ability to work. Of course it is. You're human. And therefore, some compassion for yourself about how much you can cope with, what situations you can deal with. You know, maybe that you don't answer the phone to start with, you know, somebody else does that, or you do just things by email if you're finding it difficult to hold a conversation without becoming upset, for example. However, of course, if it's actually work that is one of the stress factors, then of course that does bring into question the whole picture of, well, how do we look at that going forward? And that is particularly interesting, because if you run your own business and your source of your stress is primarily your work and your business, then there obviously needs to be some navel gazing and reflection about why is that and what can be done about that. And looking at the business as a whole and saying, well, why is this the case and how could that be better handled going forward? Is it that actually you need help delegating, bringing in a VA, bringing in an associate? Or in some cases, is it that it's actually got bigger than you really want to be handling? And actually, that was my eventual decision. I had a team of associates, and I sound a bit accident prone here, but in 2023, I broke my ankle, ended up in hospital with pins and plates and stuff while still running said business. And I'd been sort of looking at the future of the business. I got a 2-year plan put together. And at that point, I just thought, you know what, I'm really finding it very hard to keep a handle on what everybody else is doing and keep myself well. And my other conditions are long-term and lifelong, so I need to have a lifelong management strategy. So I actually decided that having a big team was not something that I wanted anymore for my future health and well-being associated with my work. So I chose to exit that business and go back to basically being a bit of a solopreneur, which brings its other challenges, but actually it also means I can prioritize my needs, my day-to-day needs, and fit my work around that, and vice versa, rather than also having to contend with the extended impact of a big team. So there are lots of things to think about, but it's still actually the idea of having a graded return still applies, and looking at tasks and activities that might cause additional stress. So actually, an interesting conversation I had with somebody last year with someone who was a call handler for emergencies, not a call handler, sorry, but had to listen to the calls for emergency services. And they returned to work, supported by the workplace, returned to work part-time, but with what we would class as a restriction of not listening to those calls, because those calls were too emotionally difficult for that person following their particular situation. So that's one of the things that you would look at. We do what we call a job demands analysis, which can be physical and cognitive in terms of, do I have to be able to walk or climb stairs or drive a car? But also, do I have to concentrate for long periods, handle difficult situations, deal with traumatic situations? And that would come into the equation there of, well, I can do this bit, I can manage that, I could write a report about X, but please don't make me go and deal with that difficult, stressful situation over there. And it might be what we call a temporary restriction, just something you don't do initially, but you then might build back up to it. Or for some people, it might be a permanent change.
Mm. Yeah, I'm just thinking about Denise, some of my own relatable experience. So yeah, it is. Because after you've had a significant change in your life, through illness, through health, whatever it is, you do change your outlook as well, don't you? So it may just be a reframing of expectations and
what you expect of yourself, what others think of you, what others expect you're capable of is really big, yeah.
You mentioned your own anxiety about going back onto stage, and so your own capability may never return. So you've got to think about if that's the fundamental underpinning of your business.
Yes.
Do you have to do a rethink? And that, yeah, so this could be a complete, yeah,
it's
life
really,
change.
Yeah, it can be very, very pivotal. Pivotal, what's that? Yes, pivotal. It can totally sweep the carpet out, the rug out from under you, and you have to start again, which, again, you know, I mean, fascinating, because I'm very much a believer in that our skills, our knowledge, our life experiences, what we pull together. That's what I've been doing now to create something new. But there's loss in there, letting go of an old self. And sometimes it's also about removing yourself from a situation where, you know, if you were leading a particular style of business with a particular team of people and you have fundamentally changed your approach to your life, but other people expect you to be the same leader, the same person with the same approach that you were before, and you're just not. There's no longer a match between you and your business, and something has to change in order to be well for the longer term.
And also, I suppose if you're the kind of leader that lives on adrenaline and stress and 24/7, working all hours and propping it up and plugging holes, and then suddenly you're not, that's potentially many business leaders are three people in terms of headcount, aren't they? So if you're trying to reduce all of that impact, you're losing two people's input to the business in terms of 14-hour days plus worrying about it all night. Suddenly you say, I can't take this stress anymore. And you've got, hang on, who's going to, if not me, then who?
And because you can't, you know, somebody else is not going to step in and do what you did because they don't own the business.
No.
But also the loss of identity there as well is that if people manage without you, what is your role? They don't need you anymore. They replace you in some other means. So then you think, well, what am I even here for? You know, so it can bring on quite a significant kind of existential crisis. And actually, it's just one of the questions I ask people to consider is, who or what drives you in your business? Because hopefully it's you in your driving seat, you controlling how much you work, when you work, how you work, because of what you love. And you probably went into business because you love what you do. But if it's got to a point where actually, and it could be other people, but it might be things like fear and anxiety. Is it actually fear of failing? Is it fear of not making enough money to pay the rest of the team? Is it somebody else's expectations about what this business should look like and be like that keeps somebody working too hard, too long, pushing themselves day after day, week after week, thinking, we'll get there eventually. In 3 months, I'll be able to rest. In 6 months, I'll be able to rest. And I think if somebody's on a treadmill like that where they're not enjoying it, where there's fear and anxiety underlying their behavior, then that's a suggestion that there needs to be something looked at in the dynamics of the interplay between the business. And I'm talking more and more now, actually, when I talk to people about it, as a relationship, your relationship between you, your health and your business. Because if it's your business, ultimately you want it to be working for you as well as for everybody else. So, yeah, I think it's really interesting.
I had an epiphany probably coming up for 28 months ago, so 2.5 years ago, mm-hmm. where I don't know what it was. I sort of woke up and thought, hang on a minute, I'm 60 in a couple of years' time. And I thought, hang on a minute. if I just thought about it, I sort of said to myself, I've got 15 years of what I would call good health left, 75.
You hope,
was a good age to say I can do things till 75. And then I realized, you know, looking at my parents, looking at people around me, there's definitely a shelf at that, the 75. There's a shelf as every year when you get older, but there's a significant shelf in the 70s. And I thought, well, if I want to get to 75 and be able to do roughly what I do now in some shape or form, professional speaker, stand on a stage, consult, whatever I do, I thought, I'm going to have to change something because I can't wait till I'm 72 to make a change.
Yes.
My epiphany was I actually need to invest more in me, in my health, my wellness, my fitness, my diet.
Yes.
Than I am in marketing. I was spending more on marketing than I was on me, mm-hmm. in my business. So that was kind of the epiphany. So I gave up drinking for that and other reasons.
Yeah.
I started being more mindful about what I consume in terms of food, to try to bring my weight down. And I also joined a gym, personal trainer. So I started investing time in me because I'm actually the most important part of my business and I wasn't investing in me at all. And
absolutely. You are your greatest, most valuable asset,
yeah.
but also your greatest risk if you're not looking after that asset.
And I had some health scares last August where I thought it was potentially a heart attack or something heart related. And I was fortunate enough that it wasn't, but I had ECGs, I had the full blood tests, I had the full chest x-rays, I've had ultrasounds, I'm waiting for an MRI at the moment to check something out. So I kind of came out of that feeling tick of, you know, all the major things, there's no shadows on my lungs, there's no heart, my ECGs are fine. I've still got a niggly problem, which won't go away. But yeah, it's now I know it's not critical, or don't think it's critical. But yeah, it was a bit of a wake up call because also the randomness of the surgical appointments. You know, I've just had a letter this morning saying my MRI is in 20 weeks' time. It's like I've been in agony on and off since last August. You know, and this is yet another. Almost 6 months before I even have a chance of a diagnosis, let alone a treatment.
And it's really interesting. I think, you know, small business owners, we're very used to being in control and making decisions and getting on with things. And the healthcare world is sadly not like that. You know, the resources just aren't there and things can be very, very, very slow. The more that you're able to manage yourself and keep yourself well, and if you do have the ability to have things like private healthcare, then you can speed up some of those things. But yeah, it's brings to sharp focus as well the tension between enjoying what you have right now, living the life that you have now, making time for the people that you love, the things that you love, as well as work, because you probably love that too, and it's part of what you do, it because you it's your passion, because you don't know what's around the corner and you don't know what's going to change, and you hope to make it to, you know, 75 or what have you, but actually there's no point in getting to 75 if you're exhausted and you're unwell and you've not enjoyed yourself and hoping that on the other side of your 75th birthday, you're really going to start living because we never know. We never know. And so I think there's a balance there between, you know, enjoying life, getting quality of life now within our working. You know, I don't really like the word balance because I don't think there's ever a point of balance. I think it's a negotiation. It's a dynamic thing of managing your health and your work together. But it shouldn't be a battle. It shouldn't be a battle between your health and your work. It should be some harmony, flowing together, ebbs and flows of both, and having enjoyment that's not work, and enjoying your work, and then, you know, we could go on, but we're
I would say one of the immensely empowering things as a small business owner is you don't have to work if you don't want to. But and I also balance that by saying the other side of that is you have to work when you don't want to as well.
Yeah.
It's you take the advantages of having your flexibility, freedom to be able to plan your life, to say yes to things you want to say yes to, say no to things you don't want to say you don't want to do. But also there's on the flip side, there's the situations that you end up having to do that you don't want to because you have to. And so you have to enjoy the freedom when you have it and recognize that you're chained as well.
Yeah, there's sometimes when you won't have that freedom and then you'll have there'll be a trade-off. And I think if anything, you know, can come out of this conversation for people listening is take a think, look at, you know, why are you in business? Is it working for you and your needs? So one of my kind of daily mantras for myself now is create work that works for me on every level, works for my health, works for my, you know, stability, works for my family situation, works that it's working just as hard for me as I am for it and my clients. And being intentional about that, and I think it's quite easy, isn't it? Again, when you're certainly in the early days, you're pushing, trying to build up a business, then it kind of gets its own momentum, finds its own identity, and it can run away with you. And it's at that point going, well, hang on, why are we here? Why are we doing what we're doing? And is it really fulfilling the needs that I hoped it would when I set out on this journey?
That's a great place to leave the conversation. Thank you. That is a good summary. So Heather, that's been amazing. It's been really, really insightful, and I can relate to much of it. And you know, I have a story for virtually everything you were saying there. So yeah, thank very you. Powerful. So how can people get hold of you?
So the best way to get hold of me is track me down on LinkedIn, share my profile at Heather McClellan, and then I have a website which is hkm22.com, hkm22 Consulting. And I'm, you know, run a variety of different services depending on what stage along this journey people might be at. And then I can be seen at various speaking events online and in person, depending where people are.
Thank you so much. As we bring this conversation to a close, I want to express my deepest gratitude to you, our listener, for lending your ear and heart to the cause of inclusion. If today's discussion struck a chord, consider subscribing to Inclusion Bites and become part of our ever-growing community, driving real change. Share this journey with friends, family, and colleagues. Let's amplify the voices that matter. Got thoughts, stories, or a vision to share? I'm all ears. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seachangehappen.co.uk and let's make your voice heard. Until next time, this is Joanne Lockwood, signing off with a promise to return with more enriching narratives that challenge, inspire, and unite us all. Here's to fostering a more inclusive world, one episode at a time. Catch you on the next bite.